and what's going on with other ministries as well, and what's going on in our world, what's going on in our area spiritually, politically, socially, and health-wise. And as I've been doing this, I've been paying attention and trying to develop my own read on things and settling into an idea of what's going on and trying to find a balanced read on this all, because as I'm sure many of you, if not all of you, know, that it is so easy to be swinging way out this way on things or way out this way on other things, and it's trying to find that balanced read on things and to find the answers with all this that's been happening in our world. Now, just 2 or 3 weeks ago, I received some articles from our association that speak to these things that I've been talking about. But and they were verifying the conclusions that I've been coming to. And I want to share these conclusions with you today. And these findings come from what is called the Church Answers Team, which has people involved that were part of the Healthy Church Group from our convention, which is what I did for our association as part of their Healthy Church ministry. But mine was more confined to the local geographic level, whereas theirs is everywhere. And so there are two parts to these reports, and one of these has its impact of the virus and everything related to it, and the other one goes along with that would be, you know, the politics and the other things that have been going on in the world. But the other study that goes with this talks about where our churches are right now more internally. So first is the impact of the world situations on the church. You know, we hit a time during the last year and a half to where things were starting to ease up with the virus, okay? There was a drop in reported deaths, and there was a drop in hospitalizations. Businesses were starting to open. Mask restrictions were easing up. And people gatherings were picking back up. And then, just recently, just, you know, a month or so ago, we got hit with the second wave of this crisis. The variants to the virus, the mutations of the virus. And with the reports of this, it shook the world. And in some ways, things that were easy began to clamp back down. But even though some things clamped back down, some things didn't. It seems like nobody really knows what to do, but so many are scrambling in their reactions to this. There seems to be a contradiction in what you hear, and things just seem to make no sense if you follow some of it. And fear is on the rise. The Church Answers Team identified 7 things that the church is facing with all that's going on in our world today and what presents a challenge to the church because of that. And I think it's important to share this with you today so that you can trust what I've been saying, that maybe I really do know a little bit about what I'm talking about, but also so that you can see what's happening, and that as we do, that you see where we are all in this, where we are all in this. And hopefully, with that, if there's any needed changes that need to be made, you'll see where you need to make them. But also, I'm hoping you'll feel encouraged in where you are. And so, going into these 7 things, the first thing is this: a greater polarization and division in the church and the world. Now, polarization means that divisions have widened. Okay? And our world has become more divided than ever over the last year and a half over politics, over social issues, and theories and beliefs are being opposed that run counter to the gospel. People are divided more than ever over masks versus no masks, gathering and not gathering, opening and not opening, streaming services and not streaming services, social distancing versus hugging and handshaking. And what has added to it all now is vaccinated versus not vaccinated. You know, are you going to get the shot? Are you not going to get the shot? You know, and these have been added to this mix of stuff that was already there. Luke chapter 12, verses 51 through 56 says this. It says, "Do you suppose that I came to grant peace on earth? I tell you, no matter rather division. For from now on, five members in one household will be divided, three against two and two against three. They will be divided, father against son and son against father, mother against daughter and daughter against mother, mother-in-law against daughter-in-law and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law." And he was also saying to the crowds, "When you see a cloud rising in the west, immediately you say, 'A shower is coming.' And so it turns out. And when you see a south wind blowing, you say, 'It will be hot today. It'll be a hot day.' And it turns out that way. You hypocrites, you know how to analyze the appearance of the earth and the sky, but why do you not analyze this present time?" So we need to remember that Jesus came to die, to bring peace between man and God. But because this world is a fallen world, when we surrender to the lordship of Christ, it puts us at odds with the world. It divides family members. The saved, you know, those who have a relationship with God, from the unsaved, those who don't. I remember when my father became a minister, and we would go to family gatherings, it was almost like we had the plague all of a sudden. People that we had seen and known for decades all of a sudden didn't know what to do with us, didn't want to talk to us, just stayed away from us. And it's because of this very thing. But now we have these things that have popped up over the last year or two, and these things are dividing family members too. Back in Jesus' time, the Messiah had come, and yet people denied him. They didn't believe that he had come, and he was standing right there in front of them. For us with unbelieving family members, there is a division. Something missing that they don't have, that we do have, and they can't understand us. So they can't understand us. They don't see what we see. They don't know what we know. They see the world through they don't see the world through the lens that we do. And because of that, and until they come into that same relationship with Jesus that we have, there will never be that level of connection with others that could be there. Because there's just something missing. When we add the things that were going on in the world right now and we see the hand of God in it, it widens that gap between us and non-believers, because there's more that we see and feel that others don't. Either way, this is a hard time. Knowing something others don't. Seeing things that others don't see. Not feeling the same things, and not fitting in with others like we used to because of all these divisions. So the second thing is a greater weariness. Everyone is tired. Everyone is tired. You know, people are worn out from the dealings with so many things regarding the politics and the health issues and the fires and all these things that have been going on. People are just tired. People want all this to be over. And it just keeps going on. And things keep adding to it. It goes up, it goes down. It goes up, it goes down. And people are tired. And people are listening to all kinds of things from all kinds of sources. And sharing what they think and hear with others, whether they want to hear it or not. And for some, others, whether they want to hear it or not. And, you know, and for some, they're already tired, and what they're hearing from other people doesn't help them. And for some, it promotes more fear in those who are trying to stay at peace. Now, in all fairness, some are sharing these things with good intentions, okay? And some are sharing in an attempt to understand it all as they share it with others, but everyone is tired. Isaiah chapter 40, verse 30. Though youths grow tired and Though youths grow weary and tired, and vigorous young men stumble badly, yet those who wait for the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. Everyone is tired. But God refreshes. I mean, can you imagine how things would be for you without God in this time? The third thing, an increase in decision fatigue. These situations that we're facing are trying on us all. And they have resulted in those who lead others and in those areas of responsibility have to consider new challenges. I mean, we've always had challenges, but now we have more of them. And we're having to make more decisions than ever before, with potentially greater consequences than ever before. You know, we have to deal with the COVID station and all that goes on with that, and the rules on masks and the rules on distancing, and dealing with videos and decisions that go with that, and considering health things and legalities, and facing the varying opinions and the varying responses and reactions to all of this. Then we have the fourth thing. A growing hopelessness. With the first wave of COVID, there was the feeling that many had at first, which was that, you know, we'll get through this and things will get back to normal at some point. But now, with the COVID variants, all of the things that are going on, people's hope is shrinking. And it's being replaced with fear. And people are feeling more and more hopeless. Like, rather than, well, this will be over in a little while, it's like, is it ever going to be over? Number five, confusion about how to move forward. Again, with the first wave of COVID and things beginning to ease up, the thinking was, well, when this is all over, we'll just pick up where we left off. But with things as they are now, more and more people have embraced what we have now as the new normal. Now, there's good parts of this and there's bad parts of this, okay? The good part is that God is doing a reset. And it is distancing us from the past so that we can step with him into the future. But there is also the uncertainty of things, the reactions to many over things and how this has impacted the church. And there's also the fear that is out there, and this fear keeps some people away. And some people aren't going to come back until this thing is all over with. Some people have gotten used to doing church online. And therefore, that's their new normal. I'm not going to do church in person. I'm going to do it online from now on. And we have people that are looking for new places to meet because of the impact on the church. You know, during this time, some churches have closed. Some churches are merging with others. You know, and then you have the mandates on things, you know, masks, and now the mandates on vaccinations, you know, have driven some people away. There's some places that have said, you can't come to our place unless you get vaccinated. You can't come to our place unless you do this or you do that. And so it's driven some people away. And the thing about it is we just keep getting hit with one thing after another. And we just, you know, and we're getting hit in a number of different areas. And it's not just with COVID. I mean, there's world events too, local events, social issues. And we feel, and there's this feeling of like, if I could just get my footing, if everything would just stop and I could just take a breath, but things just keep happening. And as I said, we're in a reset. And the thing about it is, it's going on not only in the church, it's going on all over the world. We have to realize that this thing is going on a global scale. It is all happening at once. That is significant. But in addition to what God is doing on a global scale, God is also working with everybody individually at the same time. And so all these things are happening, but God is allowing it. And part of that is to do a work in us that could not be done any other way. And for some, it's to make changes. For some, it is to adjust to new things. For some, it is dying to things that need to go because the time for them is over. And it's been hard to let go of them. And this is loosening our grip. We need to remember that God was doing a work in us a year before COVID hit us. And what's going on these days is the next phase in a process that God is taking us through. But this is also preparation for what's coming. 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 12 and 13. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing so that also at the revelation of his glory, you may rejoice with exultation. So this time that we're in is testing our faith. It's developing us. We're in a new time. And whatever God is doing, he's doing it through all of this. And it's an opportunity for us to grow. And to take advantage of the opportunities that God is doing this in this time. Going back to verse 13 there, it says, but to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing so that also at the revelation of his glory, you may rejoice with exultation. When we suffer for our faith, or we suffer because of our faith, we are sharing in the sufferings of Christ. He suffered because of who he is. He suffered because of why he came. But in this time now, God is doing something on the earth, and he's doing it globally, as I said, and we are here now while he is doing that. And everything that's being experienced, we're all experiencing it with him. And God is using all these things right now that are going on right now, and we need to see it all with spiritual eyes and see what he's doing and move with him in this time. Number 6, unstable structures. As I said, some churches close their doors. Now, although it's sad when we hear about that, for those of us that are still open, you know, in this time, if your doors are open and you're still functioning, then guess what? You're doing good. But all that has happened has slammed into the church. And it has challenged it. And it has challenged the organizations that the churches partner with. And the organizations that the church finds themselves under. Because everyone's getting hit. Including those organizations as well. And some of these are ones that we've supported and some of these are ones that we have been under. They're being challenged too. The seventh thing and the last thing here on this list is personnel changes. The first wave of COVID saw a reduction in church personnel. The second wave appears to be ushering in a new era to where church leaders need to rethink everything. You know, in terms of full-time staff, part-time staff, and if this were not happening with the staff in churches before, it's probably going to start now. And I would add that with that is churches merging and churches closing. And this is an adjustment for the church. But you know what? This isn't new. We've had people and churches that have already been facing this. But the thing about it is the church hates change. Because churches are made up of people, and people hate change. But the thing about it is God is a God of change. Now, the second part of this report is about how all of this has impacted the church in another way. And this second part of the report is called the 30-40-30 hypothesis. COVID resulted in a drop of 30% of churches' attendance. Now, the numbers, I will say this, they do vary from church to church. There were some churches that lost 50% of their people. But within these numbers, one will pop up that's running 110%. So they've had an increase. So the way this looks is this. Once all this started, everybody leveled out. Everybody was running around the same number. And then all of a sudden, there'd be one that all of a sudden spiked. And then there'd be this long list of places that were running about the same, everybody doing about the same, there'd be another one that spiked. So they'd be running 20, 30, and then one that would jump way up. And then everybody else would be running 20, 30, and another one would jump up. We lost probably around 20% of our people, 20%. But some of that was not the result of COVID. Some of it was that some will come back as things go on. The longer we're open, some will find their way back in. And again, as I said earlier, some are waiting for this all to be over. And once this is all completely and totally over, then we'll see them back again. You know, and that's the reason, because some have health concerns, and with some it's fear. Some will not be coming back because, as I said earlier, they have embraced watching things online. And that's the way they're going to do church from now on. Because it's easier to do church staying at home. You know, I don't have to get all dressed up. I can be comfy. You know, I can watch church in my jammies with my slippers on. And, you know, and some people have gotten used to that. The next number in this 30, 40, 30 is the 40. And these 40 are the people who came back, but their attendance is not consistent as other people's are. Maybe it's because they have jobs that cause them to miss weeks, or they have some other things going on in their lives that interfere with coming more regularly. And some just, frankly, don't want to get too involved. They like kind of hanging back and not getting too much into it all. And so that makes up that 40%. But the last part of the 30, 40, 30 is that last 30%. And these are those who have returned, and they are involved, and they're very supportive. Now, I would say that in our case, that last 30 is closer to 50%, which I'm very encouraged with. Now, the thing about all of this is that this situation that is still evolving. These are just the results at this point. This is what we're seeing over the last year and a half. But this situation is still evolving because the situations are still going on. And so those doing these studies are still watching and they're still evaluating, as is everybody who's leading a church right now or is in leadership in a church right now. The interesting thing is that the larger churches seem to be bouncing back a little bit slower than the smaller ones, but that could be because they have so much more to deal with being bigger. They have more facilities, they have more people, and so there's more to deal with there. And so with them, everything is magnified. Whatever we're dealing with, a bigger place, everything's magnified. And so that may be slowing things up for them. But again, you know, in that, you have the good and the bad in that too. So again, why am I sharing all this? Why is this important to share with you? Well, one, to encourage you, but for us to see through the spiritual lens that we have as believers of what God is doing, and for it to encourage us and for us to understand and to know what to do and how to be in this time. We have a hope that the world doesn't have. We have a hope because of Christ, and we have a hope because of who of not only knowing that, but the fact that he is in us and with us. Genesis chapter 1, verse 2 says, "The earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was moving over the surface of the waters." Now, this is back at Genesis, at the beginning of creation. But the thing about it is God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so God's Spirit is still today moving over the face of the earth, seeing everything. Nothing escapes His gaze. Nothing. He's seeing everything. Romans 8:27, and He who searches the hearts knows what the mind of the Spirit is, because He intercedes for the saints according to the will of God. So not only is He moving over the face of the earth, seeing everything, He knows our hearts. Not only does He see everything, He knows everything. He knows what's going on inside of us. He knows what we're thinking. He knows what we're feeling. 1 Corinthians 2:10. For to us God revealed them through the Spirit, for the Spirit searches all things, even the depths of God. For who among men knows the thoughts of a man except the spirit of the man which is in him? Even so, the thoughts of God no one knows except the Spirit of God. Now we have received not the Spirit of the world, but the Spirit who is from God, so that we may know the things freely given to us by God, which things we also speak, not in words taught by human wisdom, but in those taught by the Spirit, combining spiritual thoughts with spiritual words. But a natural man does not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, and he cannot understand them because they are spiritually appraised. From the beginning of time, God has been looking over the earth, seeing everything. Nothing escapes him. And he reveals things to us. The world needs what we have. If we get too caught up in all this stuff that's going on, I mean, we know what's going on, we see what's going on, but you know, we control how much we get caught up in it, right? If we get too caught up in it all, then we can't help them because of our focus. We can get off if we get too focused on the world. And then if we get too focused in the world, then we take our eyes off of God and what He's saying about what He's doing. And so we need to be careful that we don't get out of balance with it all. Because once we get out of balance, our focus is off. And we need to have the right focus, not only for us, but for all those around us. One of the problems that the church has had is that its people can get too focused on the wrong things. And for anybody who has spent a lot of time in church, you've seen this with people. And in that moment, we can lose our focus. And when that happens, we start to react to the world and stop responding to it out of the peace and the love of Christ. We need to remember that we are here for a reason. You need to remember that you are all here for a reason. We're here for a reason, and you're here for a reason. Because God is a God of purpose. And did you ever notice that Jesus wasn't the military leader that so many people mistook the Messiah to be? He wasn't. He was not that type of a leader. Now, back in Jesus' time, Rome was in power over the Jews at that time. The Romans hated the Jews, and they had the might to wipe them out if they wanted to. And in AD 66 through AD 73, the first of three major rebellions by the Jews took place against the Roman Empire. This is like 30 years after Jesus' death and ascension. And so this revolt resulted in the destruction of the Jewish towns, the displacement of the people, the taking of the land for Rome's military use, and destruction of the temple in Jerusalem in AD 70. And in Jesus' time, people were taxed, and they were taxed unfairly. And Jesus says in Luke 13:31, he says, just at that time, some Pharisees approached him saying, go away, leave here, for Herod wants to kill you. And he said to them, he says, go tell that fox, behold, I cast out demons and perform cures today and tomorrow, and the third day I reach my goal. So Jesus, in all that he did, generated a lot of talk. Everybody was talking about Jesus, and the question was, is he the Messiah? And this got Herod's attention because, again, the thinking back then was the Messiah is a military leader that's going to liberate us. And so anybody that was in authority started hearing talk about the Messiah. They started to get nervous. They started to ask questions because it's like their thinking was, is this going to affect me? And so Herod, King Herod, hears about all this. He's, you know, and so he's keeping this watchful eye on Jesus from a distance. And Herod's going to want to remove any threat to his being in power. But he's also heard about the teachings of Jesus, and he's heard about the miracles. And so he's kind of watching Jesus, but he's also fascinated with him. Now, Jesus wasn't here to be political. And his death was to be done in a manner that was prophesied. And so it wasn't for him to be killed for political reasons. And in Luke 13:32, he calls Herod a fox. Meaning, he's sly, he's destructive, and he's worthless. Jesus was one who called things for what they were. But this was only said about Herod from him when Herod was brought up to him. Now, when he would later be actually standing before Herod, you know, at the time of his crucifixion, he says absolutely nothing. Here he's got the opportunity to say something to him. He says nothing. He does nothing. But remember, he's doing what he needs to do to ensure that he died as he was supposed to. And of course, he's following the leading of his father. He's following God's leading. And so the people back then, they had Herod, who was a wicked king. He married his half-brother's wife. He had John the Baptist killed. And he had all kinds of political problems. Then you have Emperor Tiberius Caesar Augustus. You know, the Roman emperor. He was a troubled man. He had problems and issues with his role and conflicts with other leaders in government. Of Caesar, Jesus just says this: give to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. You know, that's from Matthew 22 and Luke 20. You know, give to him what's owed to him. You know, in other words, and this was about paying taxes. And so he's given a coin, and this particular coin was called the denarius, and it had an inscription on it, and had Caesar's face on it. And Jesus says, you know, give to Caesar what's his. And that's all he says. He doesn't say anything else. But again, Jesus was not a political Messiah. Now, so they had these guys in power over them at that time that they weren't happy about. And there was all kinds of problems with these guys, but also they had, in Jesus' time, they had people begging. They had people that were diseased and lame and blind, and we talked about some of that last time. They had bigotry. They had prejudice. People hated the Jews. And to be quite frank, the Jews had issues with everybody that wasn't a Jew. They even had issues with some of the people that were Jews. Like, for example, the Nazarenes, they looked down on them. There was corruption in the church, and there was persecution in the church. Now, does that sound a lot like now? The world has had many pandemics over its history. The world has had corruption. People using power and authority to do terrible things. The church being persecuted. Everything that's going on now isn't new. But it is to us. We read about it in history. But now, we are living history. Jesus did not directly address a lot of these things in his time here. So what did Jesus do? Well, he preached the kingdom, he loved people, he healed people, but he focused on the hearts of people. But what he did, the most effective thing he did by dying. And his dying changed mankind forever. What Jesus did is the only thing that has happened in this world that will last forever. No matter what man does, no matter what man plans, no matter what man builds, it's not going to last forever. It has a shelf life, it's temporary. Only Jesus and what he did is going to last forever. And that's where he put his energies. He's not going to waste time on stuff that's not going to last. Because the thing about it is this. You change the heart of a man, you change the world. And Jesus went after the hearts of men. After Christ's death, the church came under persecution. It went through changes with Jesus' death and resurrection, and it exploded with the persecution. But with all of this, it changed, and it has never been the same since. One of the keys to getting through this time is living close to God. This time is full of emptiness. This time is full of frustration. It's full of fear, dissatisfaction, and loss. Living close to God is to walk with Him and to be flexible. Rather than focusing on what we do, not focusing on what we do right now that is so consuming that it takes us off of our focus on Him. We need to make sure that we are focusing on the right things so we don't miss Him. We need to make sure that we're not so focused on the wrong things that we get off track, that we get away from Him. We need to be hanging close to Him right now and focusing on Him and what His purposes are for you in the situations that you face. There are things we all face, but there are things that you each individually face. And it's whether we're talking about the things that we all have in common or the things that are unique to you, we need to be focusing on Him right now. In the disappointments and when things go well. Because we tend to run to Him when we have a problem, right? But when things are going good, do we not just kind of back off a little bit? Do we kind of just forget about Him because we're not in a crisis? So let Him lead you. Just trust Him. Just follow Him. And as you do this, this time becomes a journey. And it becomes a time of growth. And it becomes a time of change. And some of it's good. In fact, with God, it's all good. Sometimes we don't like it because it's change. We don't like it because it's uncomfortable. We don't like it because it's new. But it's always good. And we may not see what He's doing at first, but eventually we will. And we say, wow, that was good, God. And so this time can be a time of transformation. And this is really, I think, what this time is really all about. It's a restart from where we were to where we are right now and where we're going. It's about the new normal. Now, you hear that term a lot, but God is creating a new normal. And it's not about getting back to the old normal. The old normal is gone. God's doing something new. Psalm 139, verse 13. For you formed my inward parts. You wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Your eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in your book were all written the days that were ordained for me when as yet there was not one of them. You were born when you were born. You ever ask why? Your being born when you were resulted in you being here during COVID. And all these other things that are going on. Why? Why are you here now in this time? If God is a God of purpose, and He is, then why are you here now? What does God want you to do? Because if God is a God of purpose, He's got something for you to do. That's why you're here. In the book of Esther, during the Babylonian captivity, Babylon fell to the Medes and the Persians back in 485 to 464 BC. The Persian king Ahasuerus was looking for a new queen. And so all the most beautiful women of the land were gathered and made up and presented to the king. And Esther, who was a Jew, by the way, was found to be the king's favorite. She was the cousin of Mordecai, who raised her as a daughter after the death of her parents. Now, there's this guy named Haman, who was a trusted advisor to the king. And he wanted to wipe out all the Jews because Mordecai would not bow down to him. But Mordecai had saved the life of the king. He had exposed an assassination plot. And so the king was grateful to him for that. Now, when the plan of Haman is made known to Mordecai, he tells Esther. And Esther tries to persuade Esther to tell the king. Because the king doesn't know all the full implications of Haman's plot. And so this would put Esther's life on the line. Because she would have to reveal that she was a Jew. And she would have to get an audience with the king. And the way this worked was that she could only get an audience with the king by invitation only. If he didn't invite her, she couldn't go in to see him. And so he has to initiate this. If she tries to make it happen, it could mean her death. And so Esther's afraid. And Mordecai says this to her in chapter 4 of Esther, verse 14. He says, For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have not attained royalty for such a time as this? So she devises a plan, and she's noticed by the king, who invites her to come to him, where she tells the king that she wants to have a banquet, and she wants to invite the king, and she wants to invite Haman. And at the banquet, she exposes Haman's plot and reveals her identity as a Jew, which results in Haman's death. His plan of wiping out the Jews is canceled, and the Jews are empowered, and they're given the right to defend themselves. She was born for that time to save her people. You were born when you were. Why? Your being born when you were resulted in you being here during COVID and all these other things that are going on right now. Why? Why are you here in this time? And this is also why some of you have been experiencing warfare of late, because of who you are and what you're doing and how God wants to use you. Maybe even using you in ways that you don't see yet, ways that you can't imagine yet. For some of you, as the church restarts, as the church restructures, as the church reopens, your role is huge. And it's not just a new season for the church, but for some of you, it's a restart. Both from, in addition to what you were doing before, to what you're doing now. And again, this is also why the enemy is attacking. Because he sees what you're doing and he sees your potential. If God is a God of purpose, and again he is, then why are you here now? What does God want to do with you in this time of COVID with all these other things that are going on? Why are you here now in this time? Why weren't you born 50 years earlier? Why weren't you born 50 years later? Why are you here now? In Matthew 28 and in Mark 16, we have these different versions of the Great Commission. Matthew 28:18 says this, Jesus came and spoke to them, saying, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Go therefore and make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I've commanded you, and lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the age. When we go to the Mark 16 passage, verse 15, it says, and he said to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to all creation. He who have believed and has been baptized shall be saved, but he who has disbelieved shall be condemned. These signs will accompany those who have believed. In my name they will cast out demons, they will speak with new tongues, they will pick up serpents, and if they drink any deadly poison, it won't hurt them. They'll lay hands on the sick and they will recover. The short list? Make disciples, make followers of Jesus, preach the gospel, speak the word, walk in the power and authority that is yours as a believer. The question is, how can you do this now in this time? What is uniquely you that God has you here to do now? What does he want you to do that is specific for you and is different from everybody else? This time can either turn us upside down. This time can take us out. Or this time can be your defining moment. Each one of you, this time can be your defining moment. Not only for you, but for the kingdom. The answer to what and how lie in your focus, and your focus being on God, and pursuing God, and listening to Him. That's where the answer is to that question. I can't answer it for you, but God knows. Let's pray. Father, I thank you that we have all been born for a time such as this. Everybody in this room, everybody that's listening to me, we have been born for a time such as this. I pray, Father, that all these things that are going on around us, all they've done is to create the setting for us to do what you want us to do. These things aren't new. We've had different versions and variations of them all throughout history. But you've called us to be here in the midst of these things that are going on for a time such as this. Father, I pray that you would speak to each and every one of us, that you would show us why we are here. What is it you have for us to do? And I thank you, God, that every person has a task. Every person has a role. Every person has a destiny. Why are we here, God, in a time that is historic, that has impacted the world? Why are we here? God, I pray that you would remove all the hindrances. I pray that you would remove all the distractions. I pray, Lord, that you would help us to focus on you in the right direction so that we can hear your voice. And I come against the assault of the enemy against us that would seek to distract us, to discourage us, to get us looking in the wrong direction. In your name and your authority, Jesus, I just command for those assignments to stop. so that we can focus on you and answer this question of why you have us here in this time. God, I thank you that we have the privilege of partnering with you in a time that is historic like this. We just thank you and we give you glory. And I just pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. So let me ask you these questions here. First one is, what has this time of COVID shown you about yourself? What have your times of spiritual warfare taught you and shown you about yourself? Because that's the thing, when we go through things, they show us things about us. Are you learning the lessons? Why are you here now? What does God want you to be in this? Who does God want you to be in this time? Who does God want you to be? And what does God want you to do? Okay? So God bless you. And for those of you watching us on Facebook, we'll see you next week. And so you can...